As far as introductions are concerned, in the strictest sense of our culture, that introducing ourselves is a no-no. We don't do that. We have two people, two relations within our family and within the culture that do whose job it is to do exactly that: nakanis and grandchildren. And I'm lucky here today because I have a grandmother, a grandparent here who from Raven House. I'm a grandchild of Raven House, so I can introduce my grandmother, whose name is Kasek, comes from the Raven House here in Angoon, and a great grandchild, Conrad, whose mother's grandmother is a child of Basket Bay, which is the house that I come from, which makes you a great grandchild of mine. So, as far as you're not going to hear me introducing my, you know, ourselves here in Angoon, people come, and it's strictly forbidden. You because there's always going to be a grandchild. There's always going to be Nakanis around that will do that. And when we're sitting in formal settings and what have you,
it's heavy on the formal.
Yes, for the formal sense. And a lot of what I know that you're here to listen to. To things in Tlingit, as it were, but I'm going to tell you now that I was one of the lucky ones when my parents brought us to Angoon when I must have been about 6-7 years old or so at the time, and we were literally surrounded by grandparents when we arrived here, and what makes me even more lucky in that they were alive at that time was that all of them were fairly fluent in both English and Tlingit. And they were loving and they were patient and they were able to explain all that was going on at these parties that we'd go to in English. And so a lot of everything that I learned was in English. And so I can go into a function and take me a few seconds to figure out exactly where we're at within a party, but you know, that they were able to explain everything in English as they did, you know, was really neat. And as I said, they were patient. They took as long as it took to be able to explain something until it sank in, until our minds grasped it. So,
I think a good time to interject my feelings about this is I left here and went to Sheldon Jackson. And that's the time we were forbidden to speak our language and forget our songs and dances. So my parents didn't teach me all these things. And just finding out, I observed them in a formal setting at a potlatch. We didn't introduce ourselves. Somebody introduced you. But that didn't sink in. Then yesterday, it was a revelation to me because we're teaching our children to introduce themselves. In school, who they are, and last assembly, the parents and grandparents that were there were so proud of the kids. They spoke their language and they knew their Tlingit names, and if they're Deshitan or Dog Salmon, they introduced themselves to the delegates. And the delegates were so overjoyed and overwhelmed, they put a blanket on the floor and gave them money.
Scary, you know, after she's explained something in Tlingit or in English to me, I'd say, okay, how do you say it in Tlingit? She'd say, oh, that's a hard one. And sometimes days would go by before when I got back up to the house and I'd have thought that she'd forgotten all about it. Then she comes back and she, remember when you asked, this is, you know, she used to want to think about it first
careful.
So, but more on this topic of the introductions, I think you were there. You were at the convention in 87. Mm-hmm. Was that 87, the Diamond Jubilee, 75 years in Sitka? I remember.
Yeah, 87.
I remember exactly, I think, where that came from. Richard Stitt was taking classes as an executive committee man for A&B Grand Camp, and he stood up and he announced that he had take decided to take classes in Tlingit. And so all through that convention, during recesses, we could hear him, see him off to one side practicing. And he'd be going up to old-timers to practice. But during one of his speeches, he stood up and he introduced himself. And that's where he encouraged people to, as a way of practicing, to learn who they are, to where they came from, who their parents are, where they came from, and to make that as an introduction. I don't think he intended that it would become a formal part of our way of life today. As you know, when you travel outside, we travel outside Angoon, and we go to functions out in Juneau or Sitka or somewhere else, you know, a lot of people are going to stand up, and that's immediately what they start. A person stands up, and right away it's flowing out of their mouth. I'm this, I'm so-and-so, I'm that. You won't hear anybody here in Angoon doing that, because we stick close to this concept that it's the grandchildren, it's the Nakanis that will do the introductions. And it's not a bad thing, and I don't want to those who do that, I would encourage them, use it as only as a practicing, but it's not something that should be interjected in the formal sense. When you're at a payoff party, you don't stand up and you don't introduce yourself, because there's always going to be someone in the audience, somewhere, a grandchild, like I said, a grandchild or an Akani that's going to do that introduction, because it's better in that sense, because mm-hmm. then, because it's, that's the way that our culture has lasted all these years, is because that history is passed along. You know, the reason that is it's so people would know that, you know, like when I was introducing my grandmother here, she's in Western culture, she's my aunt, but in our culture, our sense, she's my grandmother, because I'm a grandchild of Ravenhouse, and that nothing makes me prouder and stronger or more encouraged when I see my grandparents with us, because my grandpa Sam, her uncle, babied us like crazy. We lived with him for years. We grew up with him, and so it means something when I see them, my grandparents from Ravenhouse. The images in my mind that pop up are those of Grandpa Sam and my Grandma Minnie, and these are the people we lived with and who began to teach us what we know now. And the other thing that they used to love to do, they used to have all the old-timers come meet at the Blue House. Grandpa George and Grandma Fanny would be there, Jimmy Johnson, Grandpa Zuboff, Robert Zuboff. Mary Willis would be there, Grandmas Emma Hamburg and Lily George. They'd be all sitting around the kitchen table, all talking about different, just kind of like this setting.
Eating dried fish and having blueberries.
Blueberries, yes, exactly. We'd come home from school and they'd be sitting there. Mm-hmm. We'd have to quietly go. And one time my brothers and I they were all in the kitchen. We couldn't go into the kitchen because the kitchen was full and everybody was talking about just different things, mm-hmm. just like this. You know, things that were important to them. Grandma Minnie came out and she said, "Oh, good, you boys are doing your homework." And Stephen turns around and asks, "Gram, Jimmy Johnson happened to be talking to Grandpa mm-hmm. Sam and to Grandpa George just then, and Stephen asked, "What's Jimmy saying? Can you interpret?" Took Grandma Minnie a few minutes, but she's thinking as she and started coming out, and she was the question that Jimmy Johnson at that point is this, he was expressing a concern. He was saying, "What is it going to be like when we're gone? How are these young people? You know, we don't see these young people as involved in the parties, these functions that we go to. It's going to die." He was worried. He was expressing his concern. Grandpa Sam and Grandpa George and Grandpa Robert Zuboff, all they were listening, and Grandpa Zuboff was the first one to pipe in after he was through, and he says, "I don't think so." He said, "It's like us. We were young once. I'm sure our uncles thought the same thing. What is it going to be like? We're going to lose our way of life. These young ones are not paying as much attention as we'd like. But history and life has a way of interjecting those people that are going to keep the culture alive. And I think that's what's happening now. We it turned out here we are almost 35 some odd years later. Well, almost 40 years, come to think.
Maybe 50.
Grief. Because we were just kids at that time, and the culture is alive. It's still here. And those old-timers, I think, and today, if you go into a party here in Angoon, a lot of it, about 80%, 85, maybe 90% of it is in English. But right. An old-timer who doesn't speak English, who suddenly is transformed from the past into the future and is put into the middle of our party, he'll take a few minutes, and even if he's not understanding the English, he's going to know exactly where we're mm-hmm. at. Because one of the lucky things we managed to do is we've managed to hang on to the format of our parties. And that's George Jim used to always say, he said, Western culture is funny. Their laws change, your laws change all the time. But ours, it never changes. It's been the same for thousands of years. And that's the same way with our format of the parties. You know, old-timers would know exactly where we're at in a party even if they didn't understand the English.
I've heard people say Angoon is the last stronghold of the culture, steeped in culture. And different people, different towns have different ways of doing ko'ig. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned to them the house leaders, like for Raven House would be Uncle Sam and Billy Jones and Jimmy Johnson, mm-hmm. the Deshitan. Wasahak kwati, how are we going to proceed? They would sit and discuss mm-hmm. so they could do it properly.
That process, the grandpa Sam used to, the first illustration he used when they're doing that process, he used to say it's like when they come to a meeting, it's like they have this rough square block of wood that's full of splinters and everything. He said the meeting is not going to be done until that block of rough splintered wood is as smooth and as round as can possibly be, because at those meetings they'd be making those decisions as to how a party is going to be held, mm-hmm. and they'd even talk about how they're going to speak. Somebody would say, okay, let's do it this way. But if the others disagreed, and they wouldn't argue either. They'd say, no, wait, try it this way. Because if you say it this way, it's going to hurt this family or it's going to hurt that person.
Right.
Do it this way, say it this way, so that nobody is hurt. Because our parties are, they're not just a fun thing. It
has deep meaning.
It has... The politics that's going on there extends not just for the here and now, not just for the next year or two, but for the generations that are yet unborn. Grandpa Sam used to always tell us that the reason that we're living this respected life now, that's the way he would put it, it isn't because of our own doing. It's not because of our own work. It's because your grandpa, Dikye Thnau, worked his fingers to the bone, so that those of us that weren't born yet could live this way. And that's the way it is for anybody that, you know, Graham mentions the Hitsatis, the house masters. That's the main job of those men that are Hitsatis, are the heads of the tribes, is that they preserve and protect the culture, this way of life, so that those generations that aren't even born yet will have this to be able to live the way we've lived, and to be able to know each other, to respect each other. So,
I have to say something about that introduction. Mm-hmm. It was 1983. I was elected Grand Secretary for ANS. It was 84. We had it in Haines. And during a recess, I went up to the balcony to speak with the elders seated there. I walked up and I started saying my name and Angundach and little George Williams. I know who you are. You're from Angoon, you're Sam Johnson's niece. I was like, they used to tell us, don't ever talk about who you are. Ku siku ka ku siku. People that know you wherever you travel.
Exactly. And I found the same thing. People that I didn't even know would come up and, you know, they'd say, I know who you are. You're Sam Minnie's grandson. You're Dan and Verna's son. You're Lucy Diaz's grandson. And then when you became a grand officer, they added that also. They said, oh, you're the grand secretary's nephew. And then as grand president, you know, the same thing. You're nephew to the grand president of ANS. You know, it was amazing that these old timers could hang on to these relationships, and they zero in immediately as to who you are. Even if if they only get your name, they zero in. I think the first time that I had that happen to me was when we first came to Angoon. Grandma Minnie sent me to little Grandma Mary. James.
Oh,
you remember
little Mary? Mm-hmm. She, yeah. Her daughter married Tom Zuboff. Mm-hmm. Tommy Zuboff.
I think it was. Yeah, she had. Remember her son, Joe. He was blind. Grandma Minnie sent me. She asked for one of us to come get something for Grandma Minnie after school. So Grandma Minnie sent me there. I was surprised then that. I went to the house and I knocked on the door, and little grandma opens the door and says, oh, okay, just a minute. So I stepped in and I didn't know her son. I hadn't met her son yet. This is just, we'd only been in Angoon maybe a few weeks or so. So I still meeting people. And I didn't know he was sitting behind the door. And all of a sudden he pipes in out of there. I almost jumped out of my skin when he said, which one are you? I turned around and I just, you know, after caught my breath, you know, this little kid that almost jumped through the ceiling. And I told him, my name is Dan. He kind of frowned. He said, no, not your English name. He said, your real name. So I told him at that time, Anya. Oh, he says, you know, sitting there, you're the oldest one. Here they knew who we were. This man that I was meeting for the very first time in my life, he zeroed in immediately that I was the oldest of the children that just moved in.
He was blind and kind of short.
Yeah, he was blind, but I understand that he knew a great deal of the culture because that's Alan's uncle. And a lot of what Alan Zuboff knows now comes from what he learned from his uncle. And so I understand you had Alan here yesterday. Alan, we worked together in the fall time. Put it that way.
Yeah, it was a long session. Mm-hmm. Once you opened up, his wife said a lot of things that were important. Maxine, before she left, had things to say. It's like the dam broke. We're trying to get the people to say, so the children, our grandchildren in Juneau, in other areas, are learning what they're learning so they could learn it correctly. So I'm glad that you're here, and I'm glad you're recording what you know. This is so important for the survival of our culture. If our culture dies, our language dies, we are a lost people.
I'm also going to express that happy that the university would go to this extent to be able to do something of this sort, because, you know.
Segunaschish Wudashitla, that's her Tlingit name. So, Alice Taff. Mm-hmm.
It is a language. I don't want it to be misunderstood what I'm going to say now is that it's good that the language is being taught, but the language needs to be, you need to tie it in with everything else. The language is nothing if you just learn it by itself, and it becomes separate from the way of the culture. You know, integrate. If you're going to take the time to learn it, also take the time to start getting to know who your family are, what your clan's history is, how that clan interties with the rest of the tribe, and then how that tribe interrelates with the other tribes of the community, and then how that community interrelates it, because it just continually expands.
Like a wave.
Because if you learn just the language just for the sake of learning the language and not being a participant in this way of life, it's for nothing, is what I'm going to say. Because you need to tie it in with the rest of the life. Because if for those of you that are wanting to learn this language, which is good, but make sure that you don't stop there. This is not. Don't treat it like you're trying to. You're coming into the university to say you want to learn a European language of some sort, just so you can go travel to say France or Spain and be able to communicate with those people. You know, get to know the people, that the culture who developed this language and why they developed it and how it came to be. Because that's what's being lost in this day and age, I think, is that, you know, we look around and we see so many of our people that are lost. You know, there's aspects of our culture that our grandparents would literally cry about if they knew wasn't being adhered to. Yeah, and if you're wanting an example, marriages. Let's start with that one, I guess. We have too many of our people, our children, are running around with their brothers and their sisters. Our culture in many ways is inflexible. It's inflexible, it's not going to bend for anything. And you come to a party here in Angoon, a function here in Angoon, and you're gonna feel it immediately if you haven't adhered to some part of the culture. You know, let's take this in when two couples get together. In the old days, it literally caused wars. In the old days, if a couple, especially if they were high-ranking people, went together and they decided to be together and to have children. You know, everybody's familiar with the concept of adding, dividing and multiplying by 9, where numbers get cancelled out when you do that. That's the way it is with people who are going to marry each other's, their brothers or their sisters. Their children are cancelled out. It sounds mean, it sounds cruel, but that's the way life is.
Marriages were arranged.
Arranged marriages were the what occurred in the old days. That was to prevent the children being cancelled out, as it were. If you're going to learn the culture, also learn this aspect also, because if you're going to want to pass that language on to your children, and if they're going to want to fit into the way of life of our people, then you want them to be of value. You want them to be respected. You want them to be a part. But if the parents, right from the get-go, cancel out their ability to be a part of that by being married to their brothers or their sisters, then the purpose of is defeated. So that's one thing, that where the culture is inflexible. It's to those of us who live in this way of life, where, you know, because we don't always walk around and talk about what it is we may know and what have you, it doesn't mean that a thing doesn't exist, you know.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that you'll never hear people talk about in the formal sense is the ranking system our people had. It's always just under the surface. And that's something that our grandparents guarded and protected. And that's where this arranged marriages came from.
Mm-hmm.
The idea was always to strengthen the bloodlines. Always to strengthen the bloodlines. And that was the goal. That was the aim.
Mm-hmm.
It was... and the most preferred arrangement that allowed so that the children that would be born from a marriage to either be equal to the parents or to be even greater in rank than the parents was when the man was uncle to the woman. And that they're both the opposite tribes. And that they come from, they both come from the same community.
Mm-hmm.
If the man, say, comes from another community, and he comes and he marries a woman here, but that woman happens to be still his niece, the children are gonna be high in rank, but they'll be equal in rank to the parents. But if the man happened to be from Angoon, say the man comes from the Killowell house or the Bear house, and the lady is Deshitan, or Hlinedi, dog salmon. We have two raven tribes here in Angoon, Raven, Deshitan, and dog salmon, Hlinedi, your father's people. Then the likelihood that being his, the children that these two couple will have will be greater in rank. And that's the goal.
Yeah.
That's the goal, because they're not thinking of the here and now. They're thinking down the road. They're thinking generations down the road. And that's exactly what happens at a payoff party. Even to this day, you know, people may think we're just there to have a good time. We take care of the serious business of paying off the people who have worked for us, you know, the host family. But it's not merely to have a good time. You see formal... singing, the formal speeches that are going
regalia.
On. Regalia. The regalia coming out. That's how the history is being mm-hmm. pressed forward. I know that you've been to some of the parties and you may have got, I don't know if you've been among those that have gotten impatient, you know, when the party is, you get to the serious part and the people put on their regalia and we're getting to the part that's called the mourning part. Getting down to the nitty gritty, and some people will tend to get real antsy and fidgety, mm-hmm. and they'll say, "It's taking so long," you know. But the thing is, if they were paying attention, if they were watching what was going on, an amazing thing will happen. Is that all of a sudden, they'll get started, and then things will suddenly finish. I was at one party one time, Alan, old man, Joey. Joey is the Hitsatifa Raven House, is mm-hmm. Juno, Joey Zuba. The three of us got started in doing this morning part. And for us, we all thought it 40 minutes, almost an hour long is what we thought. Oh, that didn't take too long. We were taking off our things and, you know, people were wiping their eyes, the families, you know, because these are pure emotion when we're at that point. And anyway, the other people that were really into it came up to us and they were expressing how that this was the longest time that it took for us to do the morning part. And what do you mean the longest time? And they told us, we started at 10, they said. They said, "Do you see the time?" You look at the time, 2:30 in the morning. 4.5 hours it took. There's an idea, a thought, a concept that Grandpa Zuboff and Grandpa James and Grandpa Zuba and Grandpa Sam all said, talked about that same thing happening. That it's at that point where our grandparents are with us. And it's because they're with us, they're encouraging us, they're that we're feeling their presence, and so we're all sense of time is lost. And it's another idea, another concept they said is that it's at that moment that the past, the present, and the future, it's at that moment where everything that's the politics is being projected into the future. Because it's when we lose that sense of time and that all of these three time periods are suddenly right there with us. And to us, like I said, we all thought it was only 40 minutes or so, not more than an hour. And here it took 4.5 hours to do. But there were, you can be sure that the people who weren't paying attention, people who didn't understand what was going on the floor at that time, were antsy because the speeches were going on, the songs were going on. So I encourage those of you that are wanting to learn this way of life, delve into it with everything you've got, because there's everybody has computers in this day and age. There are some programs that the instructors are going to say, there's nothing you can do to this program to hurt it. Do what you need to do it and to learn the program. Well, that's the way our culture is too. Don't be afraid that something's going to hurt you. Delve into it. Learn every aspect of it that you can. Because if there's anything that's more important than learning the language, it's learning how to use it in this way of life. And like I said before, I grew up surrounded by grandparents who I was lucky enough were fluent in English. And that's the way they taught me this. What I know is because... is they taught it in English, and they didn't do it because they were wanting to be mean to me. They didn't want me to learn the language. They wanted to make sure that I understood what mm-hmm. they were saying, and they had the great capacity to explain it, and they were patient. And it didn't just happen overnight. From the time that I think my first lesson in the culture, I was 9. I don't know what. Meeting it was that Grandpa Sam, they had this, talked about these meetings our grandparents always had before these big payoff parties. But he came home and he was not real pleased. I don't know what happened, but I was busy in the kitchen and he came over and he sits down at the table and he's really deep in thought, and he looks at me, he says, "Bachkan, come here." He says, how old are you, grandson?" And I'm standing there, a little 8, 9-year-old. I said, 9, Grandpa. He holds my hand. He says, "Too young to understand, but old enough to remember." And he sat down, and I got my first lesson in the culture. And it had to do with respecting other people, especially people of other tribes, and knowing what those people's relationship is to ourselves, because apparently years later, I guess I figured out that apparently somebody in the opposite tribe to him had said something that he disagreed with, but he didn't battle the person.
No.
They eventually during the course of the meetings that they've had, things are straightened out, and the party itself in the end was something that everybody was pleased with. We get back to that chunk of wood again. By the time that party came about, that was a perfectly round and smooth ball.
Speaking of that, could you touch a little on the sleeping man mask? Was that a peace offering from the Tsimshian to the Deshitan?
How does it go? Not so much a peace offering.
Was a gift?
It was a gift. And I don't know how much we want to delve into this. Something.
Yeah, but it's everybody enjoys it when it comes out because he's got big eyes that blink. who dances in it? Joey?
Joey will. It belongs to Joey, but he'll call a grandchild out to dance in it. But yeah, that one has some pretty heady politics, and
I've heard that.
I don't know that.
You don't need to.
But what we can say about it is that it was a very intense political gift from mm-hmm. the Tsimshians to our people. Because of something that occurred between our two tribes, and in appreciation, the Tsimshians came and gave us a number of gifts. The sleeping man mask was one of them. My headdress was another. And there's a third item. What is the third item now? Do you remember? Sleeping Mm-mm. man?
No.
Sleeping man.
I don't think I even knew anything other than the sleeping man mask.
Yeah, there's a, when we were in New York in 99, mm-hmm. we think we found the headdress. Incredible piece of work. It was clearly Sim Sian made, but it was recorded. It was ancient. The museum said that it was between 550 and 600 years old. And that puts it at about the same time this big event that happened that caused this exchange of gifts. Oh, the third items was the songs.
Oh,
we our incoming song, the one that we
that's
sing.
The one dum de dum something like that.
No, that's the one. Well, you hear a lot of different communities singing yeah. it now. That's they gave us that incoming song. Various community, various tribes and people are singing the same song now. And that's the other thing I think we should probably say is that be
simply what song is that?
The incoming?
Yeah.
The Deshitan entrance.
That was one of the gifts that was given to Angoon by the Sim Sians. And again, some pretty heady politicking was going on at the time for that to have happened. And so, you know, these songs, the songs that we sing, the names that our very names are the way that our history is carried on. It's one of the methods in which has allowed our culture to last, 10,000 or so years, is because our history has been passed along in this, not just the storytelling, the legends, but the songs and in the names. Mm-hmm. You know, her name comes from something because of an event that occurred in her family group, and the family wanted to remember that. So a name was contracted from all of that history, and Kaseik is where it came from. The name that I have from Raven House, Anya, it means the face of a town.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from a time, ancient times, when our grandpa from Raven House people were invited to a big party, and it's so long ago they don't know which tribe it was that invited Angoon. All they remember, Grandpa Sam would say, is that they could remember is that it came from the host tribe was from the south of us, who invited Angoon to come to their big payoff party. They definitely wanted Deshitan there. Well, when the time came to go to this party, the headman of Raven House got really sick. He was unable to attend that party. So what he ended up doing was he pulled his hat out, brought his artifacts out, and he handed them to his younger brother, and he said, "I can't go, but you're going to lead the people. You're going to go." And so the younger brother did. The younger brother led the Deshitan down to this community, to this big payoff party. And the following spring, the head man of the family that hosted that big party, he and a group of people from that community came back up to Angoon, and their purpose was to visit the head man. Because he didn't make it to their party, they came up to visit him. And during the course of that stay, their head man spoke about the younger brother and how the younger brother represented the Deshitan as a whole so well, how he represented his older brother so well. And during the course of his big formal speech, he said he was like the face of the town. He represented you so well. And while those people were still here, that older brother, in appreciation to his younger brother, called his younger brother out, and he thanked their visitors for their kind words and all. And he took everything that he said about his younger brother and he contracted it into this name and said, "Because of what you've said and because he did so well, we're going to create this name, Anya, and I'm giving it to my brother, my little brother." And so that's where this name came from. That's the history of this community. So that every community, every tribe, every individual from throughout the whole region have their own names, their own history. Be proud of that history. In the ancient times, it was tantamount to war to take somebody else's song, take somebody else's name without permission, to use it, to take it, or use it in any way without permission. Literally, when I was in high school, we had an anthropology class, and then she didn't really understand all of the inner workings of our way of life, and so she thought it was a crude and uncouth thing to learn that our people, some of our tribes, would go to war against each other just because somebody in one of the tribes of that tribe that they were going to war with used a name or sang a song that was not theirs without permission. But again, it gets down to this. That's where our history is. That history of that name, Anya, belongs to Raven House. Doesn't belong to any of the other tribes. It's the privilege of grandparents to be able to give their names to their grandchildren that they love, that they're going to cherish. They can give that name to that grandchild, even if they're not from the same house. That's what happened here with me when I was first born. My grandpa Sam decided he was going to give me that name, Anya. It's a Raven House name. But that was just the way he felt for me is at the time when I was born. And to this day, that's the same thing that I feel when I'm around these grandparents. Joey, when he is aware of that story, he knows how I got the name. My grandma here and my other grandmas, her daughters, I call all of them my grams because my grandparents, because I love my grandparents from the Raven House. They babied us, they took care of us like crazy when we were growing up. And I'm happy to say that that's still the case today. They're just as loving as they were as the ones that came before them.
Thank you for your words. And I'm sure these ladies, I've recorded it very well, and you spoke so good, so well. Each time we hear from one of you house leaders, I learn something. I learned it wrong. I wasn't aware. Because I went to Sheldon Jackson when I was 13. And then I got married and never came back to Angoon. For how long? I've been back for payoff parties, that's it. And yet it's hard to see the family home in the village. Mm-hmm. And the churchmans, mm-hmm. The houses that were there are no longer there. And all our people that we cherished are no longer there. It's really hard sometimes to come back.
Well, keeping alive their memories is always a goal, and that's what, when in the strictest formal sense, when we're doing the parties, it's them we're calling to. They're not really gone when we're calling out their names. Because when you come up, like I started saying earlier, it's not just you yourself, the individual. I can see, I can hear Grandma James, your mother, I have to talk about Grandma Fanny for a moment. I just loved her because it always surprised me the way she was with us, with my brothers and I. We were all just little tykes, in Hawk Inlet and then over here. And yet, for some reason, she was always so formal with us. She treated us like we were old men, that, her uncles or something. If we came to the house, she's clearing the table and she'd ask us, "You want a soda? You want juice? You want tea?" We started drinking tea early. Very early. And pastries and not having, but she always treated us with so much formality. And as a kid, it always amazed me. I always wondered about that. And you know who I think hit the nail on the head was the grandma, Donnell. I remember we were at doing in Sitka one time, and we were sitting at Nakahiti, and this is what we were doing. We were all talking about different things, of remembering things from our childhood. And Donnell was sitting there, and she's the one that she said, "You know what? I heard you mention that before, and I've been thinking about that," she said. She said, "I think I know what it is," she said. "I think it's because Grandma Fanny just loved her brother so very much, who was Grandpa Sam,
mm-hmm.
that anything that had to do with him, she was determined to treat it with as much love and as much formality as she could." And as I've thought about what Donnell said, I think she hit the nail on the head, because I could see those two sisters of Grandpa Sam's, the way they treated him, the way they loved him. And the other sister is Grandma Bennett, Annie Bennett. And she was the same. Grandma Bennett was not always here in Angoon, but amazingly, mm-hmm. as we were growing up, this one time she came to Angoon, and she arrived when the ferries were just getting started, and ferries would arrive in the middle of the night that time. And we went running up to the house after she got settled in. We gave her time to get settled in at Grandma Minnie's place. And there we barged in on them. They were already in bed, but that didn't matter. Grandma was happy to see us. I shouldn't say see us, because she didn't even bother to open her eyes. What was amazing was we each went over to her and went by the bed, and we knelt down. "Hey, Grandma, how you?" She, just by the sound of our voices, she knew which ones we were. She says, "Anya," and she grabbed my hand. And then she said, "I hear you're doing good in this subject or that subject." And then same thing with my brothers and my little sisters at that time. She knew us just by the sound of our voices. And I think, I always think about what Donnell said, and I think that's exactly mm-hmm. the way they
both loved were. Their five brothers so much, and they lost. Brothers, Sam was the last.
Yeah, they just babied him like crazy.
I think, you know, to conclude something, since we brought up Auntie Bennett,
mm-hmm.
her first trip on the plane to Seattle, tell it. They were cute. Religious.
It was cute grandma. Grandma, what was her daughter Eleanor and her husband decided to take her to Hawaii for the first time. She'd never been on a jet before. Never been on a jet. And grandma was hard of hearing too. She had hearing aid, and so in the roar of the jet going, she, you know, hearing anybody was out of the question. But Eleanor was getting pretty worried, because grandma's sitting there just holding on to the deal so tightly, her knuckles are turning white, and Eleanor would lean over, "Are you okay, Graham? Are you okay? Are you?" She wouldn't answer. Pretty soon, the stewardess came out and was standing. You know how they stand. Pretty soon, she's standing there. She's showing everybody where the doorways are. You follow the lights in the floor and how to get out of the plane in the event of an emergency. Of course, Grandma Bennett's not getting a word of any of this, because she. But after a while, Eleanor and her husband realized that Grandma was pretty relaxed. She's sitting back. And "Are you okay?" And they. "Yeah, I feel much better, especially after the lady blessed us."
Grandma.
Those are the days that Alan and I were just talking about, all these old-timers not too long ago. We were speculating, I guess you could say. We were wondering, what would life be like now if any one of these grandparents were still alive? Any one of them. You know, how much more influence would they have had on us now that we are where we find ourselves mm-hmm. in this day and age? How much more would they be able to temper us with what we need to do and follow through with? Yeah.
in closing, you can say gunaschish to Ushawat.
Yes, gunaschish for having me here to be a part of this. I hope I've said something worth the students being able to listen to.
Gunaschish yukatangi ka shkashmigi akish haste shitan gunaschish adi gudi. Thank you for, you know, sharing your words and your stories, you know, today, and thank you for coming, my grandfather's people. And it's really, you know, a great honor to hear all these different stories and all these different things that come to life, you know, today, things that are important, things that, you know, we need to address and keep alive, because you're right. These practices, this way of life needs to, you know, come back. And it's one of the things that I've heard. We need to incorporate everything into our language. Everything around us, the history. It's something that Alan has mentioned, you know. And I'm very honored to be able to listen to you, and as well as the many elders and leaders that we have listened to while we're here at home. I grew up here, and I've participated in events such as these that you've spoken of, but I was, you know, unable to understand what was happening. So for today, you know, and many other days, and all these things and all these words that you're sharing, I truly appreciate you for coming out and sharing your knowledge and all these stories, and for many others who will, I hopefully will be able to watch and take away as much as I have, if not more. And, you know, one of the things I would like to ask, you know, that I feel like I would love to know more of is, you know, this song, the songs, because, you know, like a lot of us, whenever I go to Juneau, there's a lot of songs being shared. And for me, I love to sing, but I need to know, you know, like what songs I can sing, who do I get permission from. You know, my grandmother's, my grandfather's people are the Deshitan, as he said. Who do I go for? Do I go for permission, or do I acknowledge this is my grandfather's songs? Because there's a lot of songs being sung today just out of, you know, like sharing and, you know, like for enjoyment. But I don't want to step on anyone's feet, as I would, you know, like for others to take into consideration, you know, what songs we are singing today. And if you can, you know, if you don't mind sharing.
Yeah, that, I think the best way to go about the answering you is to tell you a little story about how, you know, Garfield George, three of us. This is back in about 90, and after 91, maybe around 91, 92, one of our grandfathers, Matthew Fred, we were all at a big payoff party for the Sharks. Sharks were having a payoff party, and they managed to, it's the one time they wrangled all three of us to be sitting up at the head table. And we used to argue and fight with the usher. No, we don't. We're going to sit over here, sit with the workers. But they managed to get us all at this one table, this one for this one party. And Matthew was sitting with us. And he, during the course of the evening, he finally leans over during what we always refer to as committee meetings. It's when the hosts are trying to decide, okay, what they're going to do next. He leans into us and he says, okay, you guys, come on. He said, from now on, he said, we're going to work together. He said, I'm going to start teaching you. And poor Matthew, I think the first 2 years or so, we spent more time fighting with him than his being good students and all. But he didn't give up on us. Yeah, you know, when we first, we all looked at him and said, what do you mean? You're going to teach us, we said to him. And said, oh boy, if you guys know Matthew, he's the...
Yeah.
He goes, go off to one side and look away for just a few seconds, and then he, okay, let's try this again. He said, he pointed to us, he said, look, this gentleman up here in front, the man that's having this party, pretty soon he's going to be addressing the people at this table. He's going to be talking to, his speeches are going to start. And he says, what are you going to do? He points to me. What are you going to say if he calls your name? How are you going to answer him? You know what you're going to say? He asked. And I just was caught off guard, literally. I couldn't even answer him. And then he looked at Alan, who was sitting right next to me. What about you, Alan? What if he calls your name? You going to know how to answer him? Old man, what about you? He says, you're right. He said, I probably can't teach you anything more than what your grandparents, that he looked at me. He said, you had all kinds of grandparents who taught you. And he named them off, Sam and Minnie Johnson, George and Fanny James, Robert Zuboff, Emma Hamburg, Lily George, Jimmy Johnson, these people that would come to the house all the time we grew up around. And then he looked at Alan, he said, your Uncle Joe. He knew a lot. He didn't come to the parties, but he knew a lot. I know that's where you learned that, he told Alan. Looked at old man and he says, your parents? Your dad is head of Kilowells, the Kilowells. Yeah, you, these people taught you, you know this. He says, but what I meant when I said what I did earlier, he said, I'm going to teach you how to use what you know. He said, and that, like I said, for the first year and a half, 2 years or so, the three of us spent more time fighting with him and arguing with him than actually, you know, because it wasn't an easy process, but he didn't give up on us. And that's how our lives began to transition to where we're at now. Is that, and the point of my telling you this is that there is a big difference between just knowing something and then knowing how to use it. Because he was right. If that man up there had suddenly said, shut up, you know, I would have froze up and it's calling me. All I'd be limited to being saying at that point in time was, "Awe," you know, just to respond in one word. I wouldn't have known how to answer that man if he had called my name. I had all this knowledge from this my grandparents that they taught me. But unfortunately, in the process of them teaching me all that, they didn't teach me how to use it. And that's what Matthew did, was he took all of that, taught us how to use it, how to apply it to the parties. And so that's what I'm going to say to you now, and to those of you, the students out there, that you're going to learn the language, learn your family's histories, learn your tribe's histories, learn the history of the community that you come from, and then apply that. Learn how you're going to apply that in your lives and those of your children and your nephews and nieces. You know, even if you never get married and have your own children, you still have a responsibility because you have brothers that they may have children. And you have tribal sisters whom you're going to be responsible for teaching their sons. Who they are, where they are, how they're supposed to be conducting themselves. So the best way I can answer you is in that way, is to knowing a thing is not enough. Knowing how to apply it, knowing how to use it, is when it becomes something of value. And our way of life is a valuable thing. Because when, you know, take for instance when Angoon was shelled in 1882. It was this culture, it was this way of life that allowed our people to survive. That no housing, no food stock left over from after everything was literally destroyed. What was it that kept our people together? It was this way of life. Our head men at that time, You know, you see the head man of our tribe, you go out in front of town and you'll see that long stone out on the bluff there. His name is Dikyesh Nau. He was the head of Raven House that time. The people were getting together, they were trying to decide, what are we going to do? Many wanted to just leave. The town was destroyed. Mm-hmm. Nothing was here. Many people were thinking, I have relatives in Huna. Others, relatives in Cake. Others, relatives in Sitka and Juneau. Little Angoon could have simply disappeared then. People and be absorbed into these big communities, other communities. But our head men said, no. We've lost everything. But we have each other, and we have our way of life, and it gave us strength, and they reminded our people that a lot of blood was shed in the ancient times of our defending this land. And they said, we're going to stay and we're going to rebuild. And that's exactly what they did. Some of these old houses down, you might go walk down through Front Street and say, oh, poor houses that run down and whatnot. But you stop and think for a moment when you stop and you look at the most run-down house and think, that house is built right after the shelling. It stood this long. Despite the fact that it may be just an empty shell, that thing is still infused with the history of the people who own it. It's a testament to the fact that this way of life, this culture, can hold our people together. That's what it was designed to do to begin with. When you look at it, its only purpose is to keep our people together and to know each other well enough and to get along with each other.
So you have to know your songs.
Yeah, so learning your songs is another step. Know what it meant, what it means, what it's talking about. Like, you know, those songs are your history. Your history is tied up in those songs and those names. And the best way you can start learning is making it clear that you're available to the opposite side, that you're available for an Akani if you're sensible enough, and your opposite, your father, grandfather's people, are going to be watching, and they say, ah, this guy looks like he's sensible enough, for them to reach out and to say, okay, we're going to hire you as an Akani. That's where you start learning.
Yeah.
That's where, because as an Akani, you're going to have to learn all these different relationships. You're going to have to learn this. Other people's names. Drawback of it is that you're gonna you'll end up knowing all of the raven
the songs,
the raven side's names and all, and
yeah,
not and lose out on your own. That was a curious thing that happened to Alan and I when they'd ask us, well, you know, say like if they came and they asked, that's why I had to ask her before we got started, what Tlingit name you want me to use?
Yeah,
because you asked me to name off any of the ones from either the bears or the killer whales, I'm going to rattle it right off, because they're the ones we had to learn their names and all before we could proceed. Nakani is, you see the hinges on that door. That's exactly the way Nakanis are in our culture. You know, there's two relations in our culture that are like that. Our mother's brothers. They're the ones who keep the law. They're the ones who keep the culture. They're the ones who are charged with teaching the nephews this way of life. And the other one are Nakanis. And if the, you
yeah.
learn...
Something I need clarified in my mind, too, is, like you said, the Tsimshians gifted a song to the Deshitan.
Mm-hmm.
So when it's sung... Should it be said, or you don't
no.
have to mention no. it all the time?
No, you don't.
You can mention it at an important function.
If there's a function going on in which they are the guests and what have you.
Yeah.
You can mention that it was a gift, but mm-hmm. that's about it. Amazingly enough, the words of the song, and this I learned in Ketchikan, you know, when there's a death, when something has happened to somebody, we reach into the past. We take something of value and we bring it out. Something that's a common denominator. that you can use to comfort that those people that are hurting. We happened to be in Ketchikan one time when during this event that we were at, there was a death of one of the elders, the Simsians, and a lot of the Simsians that were in the audience just broke down crying. They were, you know, we, to begin with, they had no idea what to do. There were no Raven House people there, but there were two grandchildren, me and one other guy, the grandchildren of Raven House there. And so the common denominator that we had for us was this song she's talking about, the Sleeping Man song. So when it came time, we stood up and we addressed these people that were all in front of us. They're all broken down, they're crying, they're just hurt because of this news that's arrived, because this elder woman was just someone that each of them loved, knew and loved. So how do you comfort them? So you reach out into to what you've got, and you take what is a common denominator between you and those people that are hurting. And so I called on the other fellow who is a grandchild of Raven House too, and of Deshita. And he was the one that knew the song really well. And I asked him if he would sing the song. I told him, I'm going to talk about it, and then I'm going to introduce you, and then I'm going to ask you to sing this song so that we can comfort them. And that's, you know, basically what I told him is what I just said to you, is that we take within our culture something that's a common denominator between us, so that we're both on, we're there together, and we're able to comfort you. So I told them, I mentioned to them that this song was given to our people ages ago, even before pre-contact, before contact with Western culture. And so we started singing the song. The song was sung. And immediately, these people apparently recognized the words and all, because the older ones of the group immediately stood up. They stood up and they were crying. Continued to cry, and among them was the oldest of them was an elderly man. He just sat there holding his cane. Just you could see kind of a surprised look on his face as the song went on, was sung. And by the time the song got to the middle of the song, he also stood up, and he just kept his eyes fixed on us, on the other individual and I. Yeah, when the song was over. You know, the people came up and they thanked us, and they started leaving to make arrangements to fly home to be with the rest of their family. But this elderly gentleman came up to me, and he said, you said that this song was given to you before Western culture arrived. I said, yes, it's hundreds of years old, if not a couple thousand years old. And he says, I believe it, he said. He said, do you guys know the words to it? And they said, no, I don't think that the people taught it to our grandparents. The Raven House are the owners of this song. And we're both grandchildren of Raven House, and that you heard us say that was the reason we pulled out this song. He nodded. He says, well, let me tell you, he said, this song has been very well preserved, he said, word for word. He knew instantly what the event was and why this song was given. And there, for us, we thought it was always about, you know, about the emotions, about something other than telling the history. And there, the song apparently is, that's what it does, is it tells what happened. And it tells why the Simsians came up to Angoon, and they were presenting these gifts. And in the end, that elderly man says, you were very diplomatic. And in this case, the song was appropriate in comforting our people, he said. And he thanked me in his language.
Oh.
So when these people are there, if they can speak their language and they hear the song, they're going to know also, just like this elderly man, what that song is about. And so, and I think our grandparents, your parents, Grandpa Sam, and them would say, no, don't, just say, go as far as saying that it is a gift from them, and mm-hmm. a valuable gift, one that we value and cherish and treasure.
That's it. Gunaschish. I forget your Tlingit name.
Shukshani-ish.
Shukshani-ish. Jimmy is always pounding out. I've been sitting here trying to, what is that? What is that? What is that, Jimmy?
Shukshani-ish. Father.